We've been spending some time on the discipline of hospitality, as I said, and it's part of this series on the disciplines that lead to a flourishing life. I feel like this was exceedingly timely given our current cultural moment. It was a nice coincidence or accident that we were talking about hospitality as racial tensions began to rise. What we're talking about is how these things have become the center of our attention. And beautifully, I think our ancient text, the Bible, speaks to the situations that we face even today, cutting through tensions and challenges and inviting us into a life of neighbor love. And I think just in terms of hospitality and immigration, it was probably back at Christmas time that I talked to Megan Douglas to think about a discussion on the issue of immigration. COVID has meant that Megan's been around a little bit more. And so in mid-May, I invited her to consider a date in June, sharing with us about her PhD work on this topic. And again, not realizing how timely this would be for us. So this morning, I'd like to explore some of the biblical texts that relate to immigration. And then Megan will follow up with some specific understanding of the issues in our world today. And it's really nice to have an expert in-house, to have someone who's so knowledgeable and so competent in these areas to help guide us through. So I've been most unfair with her, though, in offering her only about 10 to 15 minutes on something that she's given her whole life to. So the hope is that this will be the beginning of a greater understanding or a greater interest for all of us. So I'll start out with my study of the biblical text, and then we'll call on Megan to kind of flesh that out a little bit for us. So through the fall and into the new year, we've been studying our Bibles together on Sunday mornings, and there have been several points at which we looked back at the Old Testament law, right? Israel's rules for life. And what we found, I think, even as we were looking at the Beatitudes and other areas, was that God had a tremendously soft heart for marginalized people. We talked about the poor and the afflicted, the widows and the orphans, and we saw how God wanted his people to care for these ones. This morning, we want to look at the immigrants who find themselves residing in Israel. And there's a very important word that speaks of the foreigner who lives in Israel, and I'm going to try to share a screen with you if I could. So there's a very important Hebrew word here that we need to look at. The Hebrew word is ger. It's a very simple word. It means something like this. It means like a sojourner, someone who's a permanent resident of Israel who was once a citizen of another land. This is a person who was often left homeless. That says homeland, but it should say homeless. But they left their homeland, is what it says, under some distress. So there was a problem in their homeland, and they sought refuge and acceptance among the people of Israel. And while this was written many, many years ago, this is very, very much part of our world today. So this morning, as we look at some Old Testament texts that relate to the sojourner, we're not going to enter into the debate about how these laws apply to us now, but rather I think it's important for us to consider or to hear the ethos of these passages. What is God's heart towards the immigrant? And how does God think about the foreigner, the displaced person, or the stranger? And then what we want to do is let that frame how we think about it, how our hearts approach the immigrant, even though we're not living in a theocracy that's ruled by Yahweh. I hope that makes sense to you. So we're just going to look at some passages and let God's heart for the immigrant shape our heart. Okay, so the first passage we want to look at is Exodus chapter 22, and we'll start at verse 21. You shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child. If you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless. Well, that's a pretty hard-hitting passage. The point is, foreigners are to be treated justly. There's to be no double standard for insiders and outsiders. And God reminds them that they were once in that position of being the outsiders, of being oppressed by the host nation. And if you're new to Christianity, part of Israel's story was that they spent a couple hundred years in slavery in Egypt. And I think there's this temptation for the host nation that when people are new to a culture and when their language skills aren't the highest, and when they don't comprehend the processes of the host nation, they're actually very vulnerable. And dishonest people can take advantage of them. And God's not really a big fan of this behavior, to say the least. He says, I will hear their cry and I will judge you. Specifically, he says, your punishment might be a role reversal in which you find yourself in their shoes. Let's take a look at another passage. Leviticus 19 is what we're into now. Leviticus 19. You should stand up before the gray head and honor the face of an old man, and you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. I just threw that in there for extra, right? That's just a nice little extra passage. Verse 33, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So this one is interesting. The statement is, do the foreigner no wrong. And that brief sentence is kind of a minimalist version of a legal code. Don't do wrong. But then this law goes beyond that, and it says, treat him as the native among you, treat him like one of your own. And then this piece, which is kind of mind-blowing, you shall love him as yourself. Like, wow, like what a heart God has for the foreigner and the immigrant, the displaced person. He wants his people to love them as themselves. And if we step back for a minute and we ask that favorite question of mine, what kind of a society does a law like this produce? Or the opposite, we might ask, what kind of a society would it produce if we failed to do that? What would a country look like where foreigners were allowed to be mistreated? I'd suggest to you this morning that you would not want to live in a world like this. It would be divisive and fearful, and disharmony and violence would be inevitable in a country like that. So the call here is to engagement with the stranger, not just tolerance, but to love and to give and to receive from them. It's a call to a reciprocal, caring relationship. The danger is that we might see ourselves above them, condescending to them, but that is not love. Amy Oden is a professor of church history, and she writes this in her book called And You Welcomed Me. The feeling of pity and the desire to better the lives of others is a good thing, often inspired by God in one's heart. But it is seductive, even dangerous, for the host to view herself as the helper. The would-be act of hospitality becomes an act of condescension and failure to see either one's own need or the true identity of the stranger as Christ. So this is Amy Oden. So she invites us to think about mutuality in love, that the stranger is not someone that we bless with our condescension, but someone we engage with, someone we learn to love. And in keeping with Matthew 25, we see the face of Jesus in them, right? God has a terrifically big heart for the stranger. Next passage is Leviticus 24. You shall have the same rule for the sojourner and for the native, for I am the Lord your God. Again, this is an important piece. There can be no double standard. The immigrant in Israel enjoys the same protections and obligations under God's law as the Israelites enjoy. And for the advanced group who want to study this further, Leviticus 25 goes on into quite a few details, that the foreigner is to be given full involvement in the Sabbath rest practices, full participation in the business world. They're to be employed, they're to employ, they're to own businesses, because God ultimately is the one landowner. And we are all sojourners on his land. Here God says, treat the immigrant fairly. And if you think this is unfair, charge it to me, because basically I own it all anyway, right? So this is God's heart. Let's flip over to Deuteronomy 14. And in context here, the people of Israel practiced the tithe. They would bring 10% of their produce and livestock to the place God appointed. And it was shared with those who had no land to produce food. In verse 28, we read this: at the end of every 3 years, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in the same year and lay it up within your towns. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, who are within your towns, shall come and eat and be filled, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands that you do. But what we see here is that the foreigner in Israel was to be under the care of the same social safety net as the fatherless and the widow, that the provision and protection of the society was to be a part of the benefits of joining themselves to this great nation under God, with just laws and mercy, even for the outsider. Again, so we're gaining this picture, I think, of what God's heart is. Let's move to Deuteronomy chapter 10 then. This will be our last passage. Deuteronomy, of course, is a restatement of the law. It was a call to keep the commandments that God had given, a kind of sermon or exhortation. And it reads this way, starting in 17. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow, and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear, for he is your praise. He is your God, who has done for you these great and terrifying things that you have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt, 70 persons. And now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven. So based in the character of God and in his just nature and his great deliverance, the command is to love the sojourner. Because like God executed justice for Israel, he will execute justice for the oppressed peoples of the world. So friends, what we have here then is a picture of how God wanted Israel to behave toward the displaced foreigner. And I think we could sum it up simply in this way, that Israel was to treat the stranger justly because they're vulnerable and because Israel was once in their position. Israel was to go beyond fairness and equity to love the immigrant as they would love themselves. Israel was to offer them full participation in the economic systems and to supply the same protections and provisions of the social safety net. They were to love the sojourner because God loves the sojourners. And this is really crucial here. He's tied his name and his justice to their plight. And friends, I have to admit that over my years of Old Testament studies, I was aware of this concept. I was aware that this Hebrew word was quite profound with meaning and instruction, but I'd never really dug into it. And as I dug into it this week, I was really challenged and encouraged and exhorted by this, that God's hospitality for the outsider is above and beyond. So Megan, why don't you come and share with us what you've been learning this, well, I guess in your lifetime, but more recently as you prepared this.
Great, thank you. Okay, can you hear me? Great. Okay, perfect. And am I, I had intended to be kind of full screen. Am I full screen right now?
That often depends on how people have their settings.
Fair enough.
If they put it on speaker view, they will see you.
Fair enough. Okay. I'm not going to have a presentation. So, okay. So thank you so much. Many of you know me already. My name is Megan Douglas, born and raised in Sault Ste. Marie, and I've attended Bethany Baptist my whole life. When Dan approached me a while back and asked if I could contribute to this conversation, I was really excited because this is a topic that's just very close to my heart. I've been involved in community development in Sault Ste. Marie on and off over the years in the area of immigration advocacy, and I'm currently doing my PhD in refugee studies. Dan used the word expert. I'm always very uncomfortable with that word. I don't know if I'll ever feel like an expert on anything. But certainly I've devoted a lot of time and energy into studying the area of migration and this concept of kind of otherness or strangers among us. Just a disclaimer before I go any further, it really needs to be said, I am a white individual. And so by virtue of being white, I can never fully understand the realities of people of color, black people, refugees, immigrants, but I aspire to learn. And so today I'm just going to share just a few insights from my time working in the field of immigration, as well as some things that God's placed on my heart. So just to open with a bit of context, Sault Ste. Marie and other towns across Canada that have traditionally been largely monocultural or monoethnic are for the first time experiencing really unprecedented levels of immigration and new levels of diversity. Sioux College and Algoma University have around 50% of their student population being international students. And so in the Sioux, that puts our international student number somewhere between 3,500 and 4,000. As well, over the years, we've received over 100 refugees from countries including Syria, Burma, and countries in West Africa. This is a very small number considering the global scale of refugees, but for a Sioux, for the town like the Sioux, it's not an insignificant number. And as well, we're going to expect to receive many more skilled migrants. These are people that are coming from other countries to Sault Ste. Marie because they have skill sets that we have a shortage of. And that's because Sault Ste. Marie is one of the cities that's part of a government program called the Northern Rural Immigration Pilot Program, which is really a government strategy to fill labor shortages in small towns. So Sault Ste. Marie is going to become, it's going to continue to become more and more diverse. All of this is occurring within a global context of massive movements of people. We're seeing the largest movement of forced migrants. This is people who are forced to leave their home because of conflict. The largest number since World War II, and that's because of the Syrian refugee crisis. Conflicts that are causing people to leave their homes are becoming, they're happening more often and they're lasting longer. So just a fact that kind of illustrates that. Refugee camps were really designed to sustain life for 5 years. The average time spent in a refugee camp is now 20 years. As well, we're seeing, of course, globalization and interconnected economies, which means that more and more people are traveling for work and school. And amidst all this, we're seeing borders becoming tighter, immigration policies are becoming stricter, we're seeing exclusionary social and political responses on the rise, and we're also seeing a lot of backlash. We're seeing a lot of deeply embedded racial inequalities. So in the States, for example, we're seeing anti-racist protests in response to the deaths of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, and of course, protests in Canada and around the world. And we can't forget, of course, the prejudices and discrimination against our Indigenous peoples in Canada as well. I really don't want to dilute the conversation around Black Lives Matter. I think that almost deserves a conversation all on its own. What I'm going to be talking today is really going to be bringing in broader discussions around diversity and inclusion. So this is all a really tricky subject to talk about. How do we talk about race and migration without getting political? It's kind of impossible. How do we speak about race when we're coming from a place of extreme privilege? How do we speak about privilege? Maybe we don't like what we see in Sault Ste. Marie in Canada right now. Maybe it makes us uncomfortable. Overnight, it seems like Walmart has become exclusively staffed by newcomers. Maybe for some of us, it's our first time seeing women in headscarves or men in turbans. So the Sioux is rapidly changing around us, and maybe we're just not sure how we feel about that. But I want to say that whatever you are feeling right now at this moment, when we talk about these issues, whatever it is you're feeling, I would recommend you to let that be your starting place. See what it is you're feeling, call it by its name. Is it excitement, anxiety, fear, anger? A conversation needs to be held about this, but before a conversation can happen, we have to name what it is we're feeling. And this is uncomfortable, but we really have to sit in the discomfort for a while, because that's where growth comes from. And as Christians, discomfort really goes with the territory. I'm seeing a black screen on my end. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but anyway, I'll keep going. So let's talk a little bit about walls. So walls go way back, of course. In ancient times, we think of the Wall of China, the Walls of Jericho. And in contemporary times, we can think of maybe the Berlin Wall, and of course, the U.S. border, Mexico, the U.S.-Mexico border wall, of course. So these walls are really meant to keep people out or keep people in, sometimes both. And other walls are immaterial, but just as effective. We can think about immigration policies, travel bans, not providing green cards, for example, or what we call permanent residency status in Canada. And other forms of immaterial walls are those that we really build in our minds and our hearts towards others. And these are far harder often to tear down than brick and mortar walls, and their consequences can be just as dire. And they don't prevent us from knowing and loving others. They prevent us from knowing and loving Christ as well, and his vision for mankind and the church. These walls that we build in our minds and our hearts, their bricks are made from really tough stuff. Their bricks are made from things like stereotypes and biases and childhood lessons, maybe things our parents taught us, media portrayals. And I'm going to argue that what holds all of these bricks together, this mortar, is fear. I heard once that we're born with two fears, fear of loud noises and fear of being dropped. So the idea is that anywhere in the world, every baby has these two fears. And the point of this is that when we think about all the other fears that we have today as adults or as young people, those were learned. And if they're learned, they can also be unlearned. One of my favorite TV shows of all time is Lost, which went on for about a billion seasons. I stopped after about season 5. But Jack Shepherd and his friends, if you haven't watched it, are on board a plane, and the plane crashes into a deserted island, or so they think. But they find out, there's a big plot twist, that there's actually another group of people already on this island, and Jack and his friends call them simply the Others. I love that. It's really not humanizing them. They don't have individual names. It's just this ominous collective, the Others. And Jack doesn't know what the Others want, and so he fears them because he fears what he doesn't know. A word that's been floating around a lot lately is xenophobia. That comes from the ancient Greek xenos, meaning stranger or foreigner, and phobos, meaning fear. So it's literally the fear of hatred of that or those who we perceive to be other, or sorry, perceive to be foreign or strange. And so we love walls and we build our own because they protect us from the others, those that we perceive to be other or strange. But we're all created in God's image. And walls prevent us from seeing God in the other. And I don't want to discredit all of our fears. I think a lot of our fears and concerns are valid. We want Sault Ste. Marie to be a safe and cohesive place. We want our economy to thrive. We want jobs for our children and their children. But however valid our concerns and fears are, or how valid we think they are, the problem is that they don't provoke us to think about systemic issues that we ourselves may be part of, like prejudice and rejection of the other. We've talked about walls. Let's move to trenches. African-American scholar C. Eric Lincoln said that dealing with racism is like coming across this deep, dark pit. I was going to call my portion of the message walls and pits, but it sounded a little bit too much like a law office. So we'll say trenches. It has a better ring to it. That's important. Okay, so it's like coming across a pit or a trench, and down in this is racism and prejudice and injustice and all these really uncomfortable, icky things that make us feel a little bit hot under the collar. And he says that there's three ways to get past this trench. You can either walk around it, you can jump over it, or you can climb down. So what does it look like to walk around or jump over? What that means for us is that is refusing to grapple with the issues that are down there. Here's some things I've heard over the past few weeks, sometimes coming from fellow believers. Well, all lives matter. If they want to work in Sault Ste. Marie, maybe they should learn English first. Racism doesn't happen in Sault Ste. Marie like it does in the States, thank goodness. That's not climbing down in the trench. It's not engaging with these issues. That's not growing. That is avoidance. So C. Eric Lincoln says what we have to do is we actually have to climb down into the trench and to sit down there in the discomfort and to leave only when we have sat down there for as long as possible. Kelly Delane Brown Douglas, an African-American priest out of Washington, says that if what is at the bottom of this trench is sin, and really that's what it is, then what's also down there is the cross. And grappling with race really makes us uncomfortable, but the cross also makes us uncomfortable. And the cross is a message of freedom and justice. And when I think about this trench and the cross being down there amidst the darkness and eventually needing to climb back out of this trench, I actually think about climbing up the cross on our way out. First Peter tells us that Christ bore the ultimate discomfort so that we can be dead to sin and live for what is right. To bring this home a little bit, I want to do a little interactive activity with you. Some of you are familiar with the platform TikTok. This is a challenge that came out of TikTok, first posted by the African-American female by the name of Kenya. Okay, so I want everybody to put five fingers in the air. The original activity was actually 10, but for the sake of time, we'll do five. Okay, put a finger down if you have been called a racial slur. I can see people, and I see that not everybody is doing this. Hands in the air. Okay, put a finger down if you have been called a racial slur. Put a finger down if you have been followed in a store unnecessarily. Put a finger down if someone has crossed the street to avoid passing you. Put a finger down if you've had someone clench their purse in an elevator with you. Put a finger down if you've had fear in your heart when stopped by the police. Okay, so I have all five up. Okay, you can put your hands down now. So if you had any fingers still in the air, that's what privilege looks like. So that's a quick and dirty exercise just to check our privilege. And now the creator of this exercise, Kenya, she had all 10 of her fingers and thumbs down when she did this exercise. So what we just did there, that was one way of beginning to climb down that trench. How do we stay down there? What does it mean for us and for Bethany to be part of systemic change, to tear down our mental and our emotional walls and to climb into these trenches? Christian author Dave Burchett said that a church that is not relevant will not change lives. It simply means being able and willing to address the big questions and concerns and the issues of immigration and race and social justice. These are big issues that we need to deal with to be relevant and change lives. Author and Washington-based Reverend Ginger Gaines Sorelli, in responding to how her predominantly white church responded to the Ferguson, Missouri shootings in 2014, said that within the congregation, we need to engage in this conversation intentionally and over a period of time and take off the blinds to see what we don't see. That's climbing down in that trench. So here are some ideas. We need to recognize that as Christians and as white Christians, it's not enough to just be not racist. We actually have to be anti-racist. We have to be intentional and active about fighting these prejudices and injustices in our society. We need to think about what we consume. There's that saying, you are what you eat. I would argue that we are also what we read and what we listen to and what we watch. So think about the skin color and the nationality of the authors of the books on your nightstand. Think about the color of the individual delivering your news at night. Think about who's providing the podcast you're listening to. Think about who you're liking or not liking on Facebook. If the people producing the information that we consume looks and sound like us, then our worldview is kept very small. We need to seek out the voices of non-white individuals. We need to hear their stories of prejudice and injustice with intent to learn. And it is not racial minorities' responsibility to educate us as white people. But when was the last time we asked our Black friends, our refugee friends, our international student friends, what it's like being a foreigner in Sault Ste. Marie, what it's like not being white, what it's like being a stranger here? Another author I love who talks about climbing down in a trench is Brené Brown. And she says that when we come across somebody in a really dark place, our first instinct is to lower them a rope and to pull them out. We say things like, it's not so bad. We've all been there. This too shall pass. But she says that what we actually need to do instead of lowering a rope and pulling them out is actually climb down there. And that's what we're talking about, climbing down in that trench and sitting with them in the darkness, in the muck, in the discomfort, and just be quiet and listen. And what that is empathy. In other words, we can't achieve empathy by walking around or jumping over this trench. And it certainly can't be achieved by building walls. So I'm going to end there. And I just want to thank all of you for this opportunity to share with you some of these thoughts. And I would just encourage that after this discussion and after the meeting that follows at around the lunch table or the dinner table, that we would talk about these things with our family, or we would call up a friend and talk about these things and seek God's guidance on what it looks for each of us to climb down in a trench and how to stay down there for a while. And to think about how we can better honor God's commands for how we should treat the others. How can we be known as a people who don't live lukewarm, merely tolerant lives, but a people who live radically empathetic lives with self-denying love for others? How can we love not just our friends, but also strangers, allies, and enemies? This is not a request for those of us who feel particularly moved to this issue of race. This is actually a standard set for us by Christ and by God, as Pastor Dan shared with us. This is a command. So I'm going to end there, and Pastor Dan, I'll send it back to you to close us in prayer and song.
Thanks, Megan. I mean, there's lots there for us to be thinking about for a long, long time. I think for me, one of the things that I heard you say that will be banging around in my head for a while is that the average refugee camp is designed for 5 years, but it's often experiencing 20 years of life. And if we think about that, when we see the immigrants in our city and we think about what have they lived through to be here, it might change our perspective a little bit. So, loved what you said. Recognize that not being a racist is not enough. We actually have to work against racism. We have to think about what we're consuming and maybe ask people. You know, I see a lot of Indian folk who have migrated here to this country, and just asking them, where are you from? What are you doing here? What are you studying? They're really interesting conversations to have. And often you're met with a really big smile, you know, because someone's engaged them. So ask them, what's it like being here in Sault Ste. Marie for you? And then empathize. Just, yeah, really important words for us today. Friends, in our world, I've alluded to this several times, it's been a tough week again. There's been more violence and there are groanings, right? And we've talked about hospitality for 3 weeks now, and we're going to move on to other topics, but boy, we can't leave this behind, right? That the love of Jesus is demonstrated in the hospitality. Hospitality of our hearts. That openness to people that are different than us. People who are outside and need care and love. And it's a healing piece, right? Like when we look at the big issues in our world, we're staggered and we don't know what we ought to do or how to resolve these things. And yet the healing hospitality of God is the instruction of Jesus for us to move forward. This morning I came across a picture that I want to show you. There was a protest in London, England, and a white supremacist was hurt in the middle of this protest, and he was injured and on the ground. And you'll see on your screen, he was picked up by a black man and carried to safety. And friends, like that kind of enemy love, it brings healing. It maybe not in the macro, the grand scale of our world, but in the day-to-day, in the Sault Ste. Marie of it all, this is who we want to be. We want to be a healing presence that loves, yes, outsiders, but even goes that step further to love our enemies. And let's let the gospel of Jesus permeate our hearts to the point that we become that kind of presence in our world. Yeah, let it be so, Father, in us. Well, we're going to close. Thanks, Megan, for participating in this way. So very helpful and so very good. And do we dare say this? I don't know if this is offensive. We're proud of you as a Bethany person. We're proud of the work you're doing. We think it's really important kingdom work. So keep at it. Keep working for it. Okay. Well, let's pray. Father, place before our eyes this vision of Jesus. This vision of the hospitable God who came, who entered the trench with us, entered into all the darkness and sin and brought light and salvation and hope. And Lord, as we see him, let our hearts be changed in his image. And we pray this through his powerful name and through the work of your Spirit. Amen.